I think one of the best ways I know of helping people meet God at a deeper level is through the use of small groups. And it is this about which we want to think this evening. There are two or three things that I would like to say by way of introduction. One is, I think we ought to face frankly the fact that there are dangers inherent in these small groups. Oh, I don't know that the danger is inherent, but there are dangers in it. Namely, some of these groups may become the type of a group which becomes so dissatisfied with the church that they separate themselves from the church. And this has happened. A second danger is that these groups may come under the domination of a very strong personality who has very strong feelings about some aspect of theology or some interpretation of the Bible, and thus this person may lead the group off on a tangent. This too has happened. And of course, there is a danger too if the group simply becomes a critical group, a sort of hate group, that we are always criticizing others, particularly the church. And thus it becomes simply a negative group. There are dangers, these and others. The second thing I would say by way of introduction is that these small groups do not appeal to everybody and are not meaningful to everybody. And therefore, I do not think that we ought to expect that everybody will be a participant in one of these small groups. I think a person has to have a feeling of need for the small group. The third introductory thing is there are different types of groups. And by the way, I forgot to bring a copy of the Faith at Work magazine to give you the address. Does anyone happen to know the address? It's in Madison Avenue. We'll see if they've got the address in there. It's something Madison Avenue, New York City. Or is it Madison Avenue? Have they? Honey, if you can help me remember to get from the office a copy of the Faith at Work magazine in the morning, I can give it to them. But I started to say there are different types of groups. For example, there is the Bible study group. These are groups who usually meet in the home sometime during the week, and they try to engage in a serious study of the Bible. By the way, these, I think, have emerged because of the ineffectiveness of the teaching that is being done in our Sunday schools. And I'm aware that many of sometimes our ministers do not look with favor upon these groups. And I know that some of them may not be good, but I just cannot. When people are engaging in a serious study of the Bible, I think this is a good thing. And I'm convinced, too, talking about our church structure and church program, I am convinced that the church of tomorrow is going to have a great many things done on days other than Sunday and at places other than the church. I think we're going to have many, many more things being done in our homes and in factories and in offices. And I think we're going to have many things done at times other than on Sunday. Who says, for example, with one of these small mission groups we were talking about, what difference does it make if it meets on Tuesday night? They engage in training on Tuesday night. Well, you say, do they have to come on Sunday night? No, they don't have to come on Sunday night. Now, I'm off the subject now. I'm back on the other one. Just wanted you to know that I knew where I was. but they don't have to come on Sunday night. And then you're going to say, but what will this do to the evening preaching service? And I say to you, uh-huh, you are trying to use these people to build something of your evening preaching service. You're using people. I know. And, of course, it's temptations for the deacons to want us to have a good, you know, big session on Sunday night. And so we want people to come on Sunday night so we can have a good showing. Well, suppose they don't come. So what? If they are studying, equipping on mission for God, they don't have to come on Sunday night. They can be counted. I mean, you know, if you want to count them in training, go ahead and count them in training. If you want to count them in the WMU, count them in the WMU. If you want to count them in the Brotherhood, count them in the Brotherhood. No matter if it's when they meet, you know. The Scripture does not say the training union meets on Sunday night at 6:30. I mean, the New English Bible doesn't. So, the training of God's people can take place any time, any place, in my judgment. But let me get back on the subject. The Bible study groups may meet any time. This is one type, and it's a good and a valid type, but it is not the type about which I'm going to speak tonight. Secondly, there is the prayer groups. This is usually composed of people who are deeply committed to the concept of prayer and who believe deeply in intercessory prayer, and these people get together and lift other people up before God. And this, I think, also is a fine type of group and certainly perfectly valid, but it is not the type about which I'm going to speak tonight. There is a third type of prayer therapy groups, or just therapy groups, not necessarily prayer therapy groups, usually based on the Yokefellow movement coming out of the book by Dr. Parker, Prayer Can Change Your Life. And they have a series of psychological tests which they will give you, and you send out to California and they'll interpret these, send them back to you, and in these groups you have a sort of therapy. I really have never been in a group of this type, and I do not know much about it. And I must honestly confess, I do not have a judgment about it. But it's not the kind of group that about which I'm going to speak tonight. Now, the type that I want to speak about, I do not know what to name it or what to call it. And about the best that I have been able to come up with is a sort of searching group. Now, let me explain what the purpose of the group is and to whom this might minister. The purpose of the group is to seek to know God at a deeper level of one's existence. And I think this type of group will be a minister to the type of person who, on the one hand, has had this rather deep experience of disillusionment. He's been in the church, he's been a part of the church, he served the church, and yet all of this is coming to be for him more and more meaningless. And though he has not, he's so often afraid to say anything about it because he does not want to seem to be disloyal, yet in his deepest being, more and more he's getting fed up. with this thing that should mean a great deal to him. So it's a person who has had this experience of disillusionment on the one hand, but who on the other hand, as I tried to indicate at another place, has a deep conviction that there is a reality. Thank you. That there is a reality to this thing. And he is aware that he himself has not discovered this reality at the depth which he would like, but he wants it very much. Indeed, he wants it so much that he is willing to grapple and to struggle and to search in order to find. Now, the person who feels this way, I think, could find a ministry or this type of group being a minister to him. Now, I would like to share with you, and I'm quite sure, I know that many of you have are now perhaps participating in groups, and so you are aware of what these are. Some of you are in study groups, some are in prayer groups, maybe some of you are in the type of struggling group of which I am speaking. But I would like just briefly to give an outline of the type of group of which we have been a part, and then we will open it up for the whole group to share together what your experience has been. First of all, the matter of size of the group. My feeling is that the group should be somewhere between 6 and 10 people in size. Take 8 would be an ideal. When it gets to be 12 and more, for this type of group, this is too many. Now, if you've got a Bible study group, you can have larger numbers than this. But see, this is a struggling group. This is a searching group. And therefore, it has to be small enough to be intensely personal so that no one is lost. Now, when this group might meet, the group of which I was a part met on Sunday night during the training union hour. We felt that this was a valid part of our training experience, and so this was when we met. My own feeling, again, in this connection is that this group can meet anytime it wants to, and it can meet any place it wants to. Now, the structure of our meeting, we had 3 major parts to what we did. Our meeting was an hour in length, and though there are differences of opinion, my own feeling is that the group meeting should probably have a definite time when it gets over. I'm aware that many times you get involved in some issue, and just when you seem to be getting right to the heart of it, the time to leave comes, and you want to keep on, and you just, you know, this stopping time bothers you. I'm aware of this. But on the other hand, when you don't have it, the temptation may be is for you to say later and later and later. And pretty soon some of the members are going to become disenchanted with it because they don't know when they're going to get home. So I personally feel that it is wise to have a closing time. Now, the first first aspect that we had was a 10-minute period of silence. We met in a small room, well, not really, it wasn't a small room, but we met in a room and we had the chairs in a circle. And we agreed that when anybody entered the room, that immediately at that point we would observe silence. And if anybody were already in the room, we would not greet them. We would not speak to them, would not say a word. Just complete silence. And when we went in this silence, we would take either a Bible with us to read or a devotional book, which we would read. We would read this and meditate and pray. And in this 10 minutes of silence, we were preparing ourselves to meet God. The Quakers would say they were honing in on God. You know, we were focusing in on God. Now, this 10 minutes of silence is more silence than most Baptists have ever experienced at one time. And it may come as a little bit of a shock, but it really is amazing how meaningful silence can be. Well, at the end of 10 minutes, the second part was a discussion by the entire group. And what we discussed, I will share with you later. But this, of course, was the major portion of our meeting, which we shared and discussed. And the third aspect was prayer. Another thing which our group did, and I don't remember whether, I'm sure we must have been influenced by Yokefellow's disciplines, but we accepted certain disciplines which the group agreed on, which was going to direct our life together. Now, I think this is very important. I think that a group must be a group under discipline. Otherwise, I think that it's liable to just end in chaos. And I think the group itself must determine what its own disciplines are, and it imposes this upon themselves. It is self-chosen. It is self-disciplined. Now, the first discipline which we accepted was the discipline of attendance. We said to each other, we don't have to come to this meeting. This is not a regularly scheduled meeting, and you don't have to come. We are meeting together because we feel deeply a mutual need. And if you feel this need, we want you to come. But if you really don't mean business, then we would appreciate your admitting it and not come. That is, we want to discover God. We need to discover God. We are serious about it. And we want to know whether you are serious or not. And thus, we decided that we were going to be there at the meeting unless we were providentially hindered. And we covenanted to each other that we were going to do this. The second discipline which we accepted was the discipline to pray by name each day for each member of the group. Now, in this first group of which we were a part, there were 9 of us in the group, which meant that we would pray daily for 8 other people by name. And this was not the kind of God bless Bill, God bless Sue, God bless Mary, God bless Sam, you know, that kind of prayer. But rather, we came to know these people in terms of where they were living and where they were struggling. And in terms of these particular areas, we lifted these people up before God. For example, I can remember so very well Elmer Vogel, who works out at International Harvester. Elmer's foreman was an alcoholic, and Elmer was trying to witness to him. The man had on other occasions had come to Elmer and talked to him about his problem. And I can remember many, many of the time that I would, say, God help Elmer this week, that he may be the kind of person to be on his job so that this man will see and feel. And if the man speaks to him, help Elmer to know what words to say. And Ruth, Elmer's wife, they have a retarded child. Be with Ruth. Help her to know how to have patience, how to relate to this child. And help her to know how to relate to these other children that she has. And help her, too, to know how to relate to the parents of retarded children, because she had felt this was where she was trying to minister. And so on. So you see, here were areas. Now let me tell you, you can't pray deeply like this every day for a person like this and not come to love them. Well, I can remember when we would get, say, there on Sunday night, and after we'd had our period of silence, before the thing had ever get started, I just have to blurt out, you know, and say, Elmer, tell me, I've been praying all week. What happened this week? You know, did the man talk to you? And you just can't help but love them. This was the second discipline. Now, the third discipline was the discipline of study. Our group, or these groups, this type of group, does not have a leader, except, as I shall point out in a moment, which is passed around from week to week. That is, there's nobody who teaches it. We are a group of fellow searchers. Now, our search is not going to be haphazard. We are going to choose something to guide our search for this deeper relationship, this deeper awareness of God. And therefore, we covenanted together that all of us, each of us, would engage each week in the serious study which was assigned for our study in order that we might have something meaningful to share when we came to the group on Sunday. Now again, we said, we are serious about this desire to search, to know, and we want you to be serious. And for a person to say, look, I tell you what, I'm so busy I don't have time to do the study, but I surely would like to come and hear y'all talk, we'd say, I'm sorry. We didn't say this, but there is no place for a parasite in this kind of group. Everybody must be involved. Everybody is committed, and everybody studies. And so to this we covenanted with each other. The fourth discipline is called the discipline of trust or confidence. And this means that we agreed that whatever was said in the group would be as sacred as though it were said in the confessional. That we would not say any word anywhere to anybody outside the group about anything that was said in the group. If a husband was there and his wife was not a member of the group, the husband was a member of the group, the wife was not a member of the group, he would not tell his wife what goes on in the group. Or if the wife was a member of the group, the husband was not, she does not share. No words of sharing anywhere with anybody. Now, this was agreed upon, but this is the kind of thing that you cannot legislate even by common agreement. It is the kind of thing that has to emerge over a period of weeks of sharing together. And it is simply a matter of developing a trust relationship with one another. And it doesn't happen automatically. Sometimes it doesn't happen. Sometimes it never happens. But you can see this thing developing. You can see one member revealing a part of himself to see how the group is going to react and how the group is going to handle him. Whether they're going to jump on this like it were a bunch of lions on some raw meat, or whether it's going to be handled with love and care and concern. And if this person is treated with care and love, then perhaps somebody else trusts a part of himself out to the group. And you can just see this thing just slowly building until we're sharing on a rather deep level. Now, I don't mean by this that this is not a therapy group as such, and it isn't that we're there just to air our neuroses or our problems. It is there. For example, Wednesday night, my wife and I were coming back from prayer meeting. We brought back one of my colleagues. We had been a member of a group together, and he said, you know, just as we parked let him out, he said, you know, I have missed that group broke up. He said, you know, I've missed our meeting together in the group, so where we had a chance to share together. And then before he got out of the car, he just, you know, unloosed, just came out. All of a lot of pent-up things about his work at school and the load that he was carrying. And he said, I have nobody except you all that I can talk to. And so it isn't, you know, that you have to reveal a lot of pet sins or things of this sort, you know, but just the things where we live, where we're struggling, things that some of us were talking about, the problems that you face in making ethical decisions in this area of life and that area of life, just real things. And here is where we are struggling, and here is where we are living. And so it is this that we share. But we do not know whether we can really tell about our deepest selves, because as my colleague says, here are some things about me that I don't want the world to know. Yeah? And so you build up this love-trust relationship. Now, many times the question is asked, why can't we make our Sunday school classes or our training unions into this kind of group? Well, this may be done, but in my judgment, it would be quite exceptional. I think that it would be exceedingly difficult, if not impossible, to do. Let me try to use an illustration to illustrate this. Well, a humorous one, which I think you will see. Suppose, I'm a member of a Sunday school class over at Crescent Hill, and I've been with these men for a number of years. We're good friends, and, you know, they come to Sunday school, and I say, hi, Doc, and he says, hi, Finley, and I say, fine, how you doing, this sort of thing, good boy, and all of these. Well, some of us, we go out after church at night, we go to Jerry's Big Boy and eat hamburgers together, you know, good social friends. All of us good, fine friends. Now, suppose my wife and I were having difficulty. I mean, suppose I'd go over there one Sunday morning and I'd say, look here, man, I want to tell you, my wife and I are really having problems. Man alive, she's always nagging me. I get up in the morning and she starts in, and every time I open my mouth, she puts her foot in it, and I'll tell you, I just don't know whether I can stand it any longer. And I'll tell you, man, if she starts me, I start on her. Man, the other night we had a real session. I'll tell you, I just don't know. I just don't know whether we can do it or not. We're just about to the breaking point. Now, if I told them that, do you think that bunch of men would treat me with love and care, hold this in confidence? Phew, no. Man, they could hardly wait for the benediction to be pronounced. To get down from that stairs down there in the foyer, and man, get down there where those people are. You know, hear about old age. Man, yeah, he and his wife, they had a fight the other night, I heard. Man, knocked her down, I heard. You know, man, they're going to have a divorce next month. Remember, bam, 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 bam. Yeah, that's the way to go. And by the time church was over, man, it'd be all over the place. And you see, I know this is what they do. So, when I go to Sunday school, you know what happens? I don't tell them what I really think. They say, how you do it? I say, fine, fine. Yeah. Now, I may be boiling within me. I may have problems. I may have all kinds of different. I'm not going to let them know it. No. I say, fine. Let them. So. I haven't developed that trust relationship yet. I don't trust you boys. But this is the problem. You know, it's sad to say, but in church, it's one of the places where people are most dishonest. Because in church, we want to appear to people like we want them to think we are. And we want them to think we got no problems, no difficulties, that we are up on top of everything, and that God is so precious to us, and that we are so good. And we want it, so we put on our mask and walk around when we are just, you know, that's not real at all. And, you know, and there is no place in the church where we can be real. In training union, we put on the program. In Sunday school, we have the lesson. In preaching, we sit there and listen. You know, all of these others. There is no place where we can be, where we can be real, open and honest. But you see, in these groups is a place where with people who have come to love us and to care, and with people whom we have come to love, we can share with them where we are living and where we are struggling. We can be our real selves and know that they will love us anyway. And this is what Christian love is, after all, you see. So I think this matter of trust is a matter of great importance. The last discipline which we had was that if anything spiritually happened to us, we would share it with other people. Now, these were simply the five which our group adopted. Nothing sacred about these. I give them to you merely as sample. You know that Yoke Fella has five other different disciplines. Other groups have other disciplines. But the point is, I think that it is important that a group live its life under a discipline. Now, one or two other practical matters. What are some possible things that you might use to guide your study, your search for this deeper relationship? And as I see it, there are at least three major areas from which you may make a choice. One is, you may study some portion of the Bible. However, let me caution something about this. When you study the Bible in this type of searching group, this study of the Bible is always in personal terms. This is not the same thing as a Bible study group. Now, you see, when you study the Bible, you can study the Bible objectively. And the purpose here is to come to have an understanding of it. And this is valid. I make no apologies for this. To have a study of the Bible in this fashion, to come to understand it, is a valid approach. But this is not what I'm talking about here. In this kind of searching group, we are studying the Bible to meet God. This is what we are seeking to do. And the thing we need to recognize is that sometimes people study the Bible to avoid meeting God. You know what I mean? They study the Bible, and they always keep it at an arm's length, and they may engage in vigorous discussion, and they may split hairs and engage in all of this. But you see, always this is a matter at arm's length. So this is one possibility. The second thing which may be used as a base for study is any one of the great devotional classics. To read and study and walk with some of the saints whose works and whose lives have become classics through the years. This can be meaningful. Well, the third possibility is to use one of the current renewal books. And I very briefly will give to you the titles of some. I'm sure most of these you already know. Some have already been mentioned. Since Keith Miller was supposed to be here this week, we'll start with his. Keith Miller has two. The first one is The Taste of New Wine. And if you have not read either of them, I would start with the first one if I were you. The Taste of New Wine. And then he has one recently out, The Second Touch. This is both of these are very, very fine. The books by Elton Trueblood, an earlier work, The Company of the Committed, is very, very good. And again, a more recent book, The Incendiary Fellowship. And incendiary, I-N-C-E-N-D-I-A-R-Y. I looked it up so I would be able to give it to you. Then there are some books by, a couple of books by Robert Raines. His first book, New Life in the Church. And the second one, Reshaping the Christian Life. Oh, Creative Brooding. Yes, Creative Brooding is a series of prayers which are very, very meaningful. He has the third one, another one, which is supposed to come out in April, entitled The Secular Congregation. But I'm not sure what that one is going to be like. Congregation. The Secular Congregation. There is a book by Elizabeth O'Connor, which gives the story of the Church of the Savior in Washington, D.C., of which Gordon Cosby was pastor, to whom I expressed my indebtedness a few moments ago. The first book that she wrote was Call to Commitment. And the second one, which is just out, I saw someone have this afternoon, Journey Inward, Journey Outward. And there are many, many other excellent books. If we would start doing this, some of you, they'd be here all night. But one of the wonderful things about it is there are so many good books being written today, and we ought to be sharing these with each other. Now, I think that this gives... One final word about the leader. Who is the leader? And as I indicated, this does not have a leader, this group. The only thing that one does, everybody is equally responsible. The only thing that is done that is that at the end of one meeting, the person who was leader for that week appoints somebody else to be leader for the next week. And the only thing that being a leader means is that you watch and see when the time to call a halt to the silence and simply say it's time to break our silence, and then you might also this person may begin the discussion, but he is not responsible for teaching, you know. Everybody is equally responsible. Fact is, well, many times in our group, we were studying about, you know, we had something to study. And when the person says it's time to break the silence, before the person could start the discussion, somebody would say, wait a minute, I want to tell you about something that happened this week. And then they would tell us, they'd start telling about some marvelous experience, some wonderful happening in their life, and we would all start rejoicing about this person and get involved and talk about this, and we'd forget about, you know, spend a whole hour talking about this person. Or the opposite might happen. Somebody might say, look, before we get started, I want to share with you a problem which I'm facing, and we might spend the whole hour talking about this person's problem. In other words, we were concerned about each other. And if we put off a study for a week or 2 weeks, it didn't bother us. We weren't rigidly bound to a study. Now, this last one, the question often is asked, should a husband and wife be in a group together? And if one had asked me this question, say, 2 years ago, I would have said, by all means, you should. Because normally it is wonderful when the husband and the wife can have the same experience together. And then, too, not only this, but when they share it on Sunday night or at whatever time it is, then during the week they can continue the conversation about what was done. However, since 2 years ago, my wife and I were out at our minister of education's home, and we were discussing this question. And both of them agreed that it is better not for the husband and wife to be together. The minister of education's wife said that when she was in a group and her husband was there, that she just didn't say anything. But when she was in another group, boy, she just rattled on. And so it depends. You see, should the husband and wife be together? If it doesn't bother either one of them, then be together. But if it does bother either one of them, then be in separate groups. All right, this is all of the...